Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh, Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game.
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni.
Float game for the win.
Touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop!
Oh. Now, here, Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Thursday. I hope you're having a great day as we're looking forward to it. Have to acknowledge it's 9/11, so let's pay tribute to all the first responders out there and those that lost their lives some years ago. But it is a day that we hold in high esteem and always want to recognize that. But looking forward to a good show today as Dustin Schutte will be joining us, Scott Dolson, the Indiana Athletics Director, and Matt Taylor, the voice of the Colts, as we will roll on today on this Thursday, getting closer and closer to the weekend and a lot closer to the Indiana football game, as it is on Friday this week, 6:30 kickoff against Indiana State. And that happens tomorrow. So it gets here a lot faster than you think. All kinds of things going on. Bill Belichick and his little girlfriend, they tried to get 4 patents. And it's almost hilarious because the patents they were trying to get are already owned by the New England Patriots, and they were virtually the same thing that they, but at the end, it would just say Bill's version, which I find to be just hilarious. I'm trying to find what they were. Here we go. The Bellustrator. No days off and ignore the noise. And Jordan, his girlfriend Jordan, submitted those and then put Bill's version behind them as if that makes a difference. They were all rejected, of course, and these were already patented by the Patriots, as I said. The saga just continues with those two, and the fact that he is just continues to allow that stuff, man, brain has gone to a little bit to mush, it appears. EA Sports will not be doing a college basketball game, as previously stated. So won't be getting that, unfortunately. The NCAA's newest threat is a challenge by the athletes wanting 5 years. That's something that we'll talk about with Scott Dolson. Of course, he doesn't have a lot of say on what happens there. That's the NCAA. But I'd just like to wondering what his opinion is, because one of the things I think about, while college athletics has obviously changed, I if you allow them to play 5 years, that changes everything. That changes all of the records. And their argument is because it's not fair. It's not fair because it's costing us money. Well, then why not 6 years? Why not 8 years? Why not 10 years? Why not unlimited? Why five? Why do they get to pick the year five? Because the NCAA has allowed athletes 5 years to play 4, which is a pretty good deal. It's going to be interesting to see. And another thing, the NCAA should be allowed to set their own rules on certain things. And this is one of those. How much eligibility you have is should certainly be up to them. It's just, that's a crazy thing, but we'll see how that works out. Glad to have everybody along, no matter where or how you're listening, especially if it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 The Ref, ESPN The Ref, always the right call down in Evansville and up in the region on the voice of the region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB. And in Fort Wayne, on the Fort Wayne's only sports station, 1380 The Fan. Glad to have you along. Keep it locked right where you got it all day long as you travel throughout the day. Men's soccer for Indiana off to its best start since 1997. That's incredible for a program that is just continuously elite. But they are currently ranked number one in the country. Todd Yeagley's squad, and what a job Todd Yeagley has done navigating through this ever-changing world of college athletics, but taking a program that is elite and maintaining it at the elite level and keeping it higher and higher. That's just an unbelievable start. They've won five. After tying number nine Clemson, they've now won five straight. They're coming off a win over Notre Dame, a very high-profile program, in the 50th matchup between those two programs. IU is 34-10-6 against Notre Dame. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. How about Schwarber? Kyle Schwarber, Schwarbombs. He hit one, and he becomes the first Major League player to ever have a four-home run game, which he did about a week ago, and he just hit his 50th home run. He becomes just the second Philly ever to do that. But he is the first major leaguer ever to have a four-home run game and a 50-home run season in the same year. And he's not done yet. He's not done yet. Where does he go? MVP. MVP are the chance for Kyle Schwarber. So hopefully that would be pretty incredible. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. How's everybody doing? Ready for the weekend? You've got an early game on Friday, 6:30 kickoff for Indiana versus Indiana State, which will allow you to watch or see some other football the rest of the weekend. I know if you're normally going to a high school game, it kind of interferes with that. We all hate that. So everybody hates that, but it is what it is. We can't change that. There's nothing that that Indiana can do about that. This is TV, and TV is the all encompassing. They're the Oz. They're the Wizard of Oz. What they say goes, pretty much. And that's what drives this stuff, unfortunately. There's going to be Friday games because they can put a game on Friday. I would rather, the coaches probably wouldn't, but I would rather see those games on Thursday. But I understand that really jacks up your practice. That gives you even, they already have one day less practice going into this game, although that should not bother Indiana. You never know. It would depend on your opponent. And Brian points out, and is correctly, the NFL has already claimed Thursday nights with Thursday night games on that. College used to do Tuesday and Thursday games pretty regularly. And if the NFL jumps in, it's kind of over. So it's a tough deal. It's a tough deal. But everybody looking for TV time as much as they can. The thing with college is there's so many more teams, so many more games. But it is what it is, and it's just their world, and we have to live in it, right? Absolutely. Looking forward to Scott Dolson being on, as Indiana is at its zenith, I would say. as far as coaching. And it's just amazing the run that they are currently having. We can all just hope that that continues, because you've got Todd Yeagley at soccer, Angel Escobedo at wrestling, which has elevated that program. Volleyball coach with Aaron. Football, I think basketball is in great hands. You got Terry Morin as well. At swimming and diving, elite. It's a pretty good run right now. So, Dustin Schutte joining us today as well. Matt Taylor, in addition to Scott Dolson. Looking forward to all of them jumping on the program with us. Looking forward to you being with us as well. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Joined now by the incomparable Dustin Schutte. How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I can't complain. If I see any better, I'd be Dustin Schutte.
I don't know if that's true, but I'll take the compliment.
How's your week going? How was the weekend? I know you were up in West Lafayette, most likely, covering the Boilers. And as they get, hey, I've been talking about Purdue and Barry Odom bucking for Coach of the Year already in the Big Ten. Doubled Purdue's win total, but not just that. They've looked good doing it. They're one of the biggest. They may be the biggest surprise of the Big Ten for me, because let's just be honest. It was like Indiana a couple years ago. They sucked. They were absolutely horrible. They were worse than Indiana was a couple years ago, and Indiana was terrible with a 3-9 season. And then they had the magical turnaround with Kurt Cignetti's first year. I don't think anybody was thinking that for Purdue, and I'm not suggesting that's what's going to happen, but, man, this stat, I say it every day, blows my mind. He is the first coach to start his tenure at Purdue 2-0 since 1916?
Yes.
I thought correct. I thought it was the 60s, and I kept saying that until I got corrected. The 60s blew my mind. That blew my mind. Not 1916? That's not even possible. But crazy, and good things going on up in West Lafayette, which, hey, that's going to make this game at the end of the year. I'm telling you, it is in West Lafayette. I think that Purdue will have 5 wins at that time. I think so that's going to be their max for the season. I don't think they beat Indiana, but man, oh man, is that going to make that game much, much more enthusiastic? And boy, I think it's going to make it a surprisingly better game.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, looking and watching this team through the first 2 weeks, there's certainly a lot of things to get better. And I would suggest too that we don't know a ton still about Purdue's team, because they played Ball State, obviously a MAC level team, and then they beat up Southern Illinois, which was an FCS opponent, a pretty good FCS opponent. Their quarterback was pretty impressive. But the fact that they have been 2-0 and second half against Southern Illinois, I think their defense gave up something like 60 total yards in that second half, and 32 of it was on the last drive when all of Purdue's first stringers were standing on the sideline. So I think it's been impressive what he's been able to do. I think there's still a little bit of let's wait and see what happens. There's going to be a lot of that. You know, we're going to really find out how good or how competitive this team is this weekend, hosting a USC team that has put up a lot of points on Missouri State and Georgia Southern the first 2 weeks of the season. So, but Barry Odom knows how to create and build optimism around the program. I think that this game's going to be really interesting. I know it's a 21.5-point spread. There's a lot of reasons why I think it's going to be closer than that. I mean, last year USC went on the road and they lost to Michigan, Minnesota, and Maryland. Maryland wasn't a very good football team last year. They don't travel well. They were a total 1-4 on the road. Purdue's offensive coordinator is Josh Henson. He was at USC the last 3 years. Their quarterback, Jaden, I can never pronounce his name, Maiava, Jaden Maiava, played under Barry Odom and Josh Henson at UNLV and then USC. So there's a lot of things that I think are advantageous for Purdue going into this game. I'm not suggesting they're going to win, but I think that that 21.5 point spread is way too high. I'm not a gambling man, Jim. I'll probably end up saying it's way too high, and then, you know, I'm sure they'll end up losing by 24 or something like that. But I think that this game is going to be much more interesting than people expect.
And that we'll wait and see, but it definitely things are going well there. Without question, the Big Ten really not into the meat of its schedule yet. There are at least a game or two this weekend, which is still a little early. But the Big Ten schedule really gets going next week when things get going. But is it does Purdue have Notre Dame this week?
No, they have USC this week. Then next week on the road to Notre Dame in 2 weeks. That's going to be another massive test.
USC is one of the teams that people aren't really talking about yet, but they are, to me, I'm like, look out. I think USC is going to be a team that kind of sneaks in. It's been Indiana and Illinois about that, and mainly in the conversation of who's that fourth team. Well, first of all, who's Michigan's not the fourth team to me. They're already booted out of that conversation. So that moves Indiana, Illinois into that. But look out for USC. They are leading the country in points scored per game, Dustin, at I think 66 is what I remember from yesterday. And it looks like that the Lincoln Riley's got it going on out there in Hollywood. And I expect them to be a team to be reckoned with this year. They've got some big games on their schedule that could really alter the Big Ten standings.
Yeah, I mean, USC, I'm a little bit hesitant to jump on board with you there just because this is kind of what Lincoln Riley teams do. They really beat up on some of these weaker opponents. And look, what they've done offensively is really impressive. But this is a defense that has also given up 18 plays passing plays of 10 plus yards, which is ranks 15th in the Big Ten. They've given up 3 touchdown passes of 20 plus yards. I don't think their secondary is very good. So, you know, at least we haven't seen it so far this season. And then you look at their schedule, obviously they've got to go on the road. And this is not necessarily, again, regarding the competition, but the fact that they traveled so poorly last season, went 1-4 on the road. They have to go to Purdue. They have to go to Illinois, to Notre Dame, to Nebraska, to Oregon. Like, when they just did not perform well. This was a team that lost to Maryland last year on the road, and Maryland ended up 3-9, 4-8, something like that. I don't remember. So and
Maryland's another team that I am shocked by how well they're doing with what they've lost. They lost their starting quarterback, who was the quarterback at Wisconsin until he got hurt, and they lost their all Big Ten running back, Roman Hemby, who's in Indiana's backfield, but yet they're better than they were a year ago. How the hell's Mike Locksley doing that?
Well, I mean, yeah, maybe. They're going to start 3-0 because they play Towson this weekend, but they'll get a big test. Mike Locksley is another guy who's an offensive kind of guru. I don't think Maryland looked very good last week against Northern Illinois. So, you know, we'll see what they have to do. But, I think there's a lot of teams here in the next couple of weeks that we're going to find a lot about. I think there's 13 or 14 teams in the Big Ten that I just have no idea whether they're good or not, just because they've played a bunch of cupcake level opponents so far.
Well, and who hasn't? Well, Purdue's not done itself any favors with its non-con schedule right now with Notre Dame on it. But you know what? Hey, what else are you going to do? But having USC this early, that's no fun. We're in week 3. I think almost all teams should be able to get their non-con games out of the way first, especially a team like Purdue and Indiana. Last year, what helped Indiana? I've said this 1,000 times. Their season from game 1 to game 11 got tougher by the game. I mean, literally, it was just a ladder for them, and perfectly set out. Now, that was a lot of luck to be honest with you. And I guess it was just unlucky that this conference game is kind of scheduled a little early. But not only is it a conference game, it's not against UCLA. It's against USC, unfortunately. Right. And had it been the other way around, Purdue would be winning that game. UCLA, at least, I think they have definitely taken the place of Purdue as the worst team in the Big Ten. And then you've got Northwestern above them. I think, like I said, I think Purdue is going to end up winning five games on the season, which is remarkable, a great turnaround in right now for them. But I know they want more, and there's nothing to say that they can't get that sixth win, because I don't know how good they can get. Who the hell thought Indiana would do what they did last year? Well, I did, but I do take credit for jumping on that one
for their success.
Well, not for the success, but I called out a 6-8-0 start for them last year, but that was because it was clear to me. I looked at that schedule and I'm like, man, this thing is set up perfectly.
Yeah. Right.
And it was, but playing USC and then Notre Dame. Wow. That is tough. But the thing about that is, after you get through that, even if Purdue is 2-2 at that time, they're probably going to be better for it as they move forward playing against those tough teams.
Well, and let me add one more onto you. After they play Notre Dame, they get a bye week, but then they host Illinois, which is now a top 10 team. So they've got, you know,
they won't be by then.
It's going to be, well, there you go. We'll see what happens in that Indiana-Illinois game, right? But I think, to your point, I think the schedule set up at least somewhat, I don't know about favorable, but at least Purdue was able to get two non-conference games in to try to build that level of confidence and build that team chemistry. Again, I know I've mentioned this multiple times on this show. This is a team that has 80 plus new players, 54 from the transfer portal. So to get a couple wins under their belt to develop that team chemistry, and I think that's huge. And then these next couple games, USC, Notre Dame, Illinois, it's really tough, but then after that, they have a three-game stretch where they go on the road to Minnesota, play at Northwestern, and host Rutgers. I think they can go 2-1 in that stretch, and then that automatically puts them at four wins. You know, I do think Purdue has the chance to get to five wins by the time they're playing Indiana. I don't know if they're going to be a bowl eligible team or not. I think we're going to find out just how good this team is this weekend. But I think there is going to be at least some level of stakes for that Old Oak and Bucket game. And again, I know it's not the Kurt Cignetti turnaround, but at the same time, when you see how bad this team was a year ago for Barry Odom to come in, if he's able to get five wins, Purdue fans are going to be dancing in the streets. And I think the other fact of this too is you also want to be competitive. Remember, this Purdue team got beat 66-7 by Notre Dame. They got beat 66-0 by Indiana. I don't probably need to tell your listener base that, remind them of that. Ohio State blew them out. They had a lot of ugly losses. So can you be competitive in those games? And I think if they can do that and get to even just four wins, I think that there would be a lot of positives to take away from this season.
Absolutely, because moving forward, now that there's rev share, that should help Purdue moving forward, because I know that probably their NIL efforts were probably geared toward basketball, which was the same for Indiana prior to rev share. The basketball programs obviously getting the lion's share of NIL money. Well, now rev share has changed that, and that will enable all teams going forward, including Purdue and Barry Odom. And Purdue has history, man. They've had success as well as it's under Barry Odom. It looks like a program on the rise, and that's tough to do in this conference, man. You've got so many great teams that are already there, but each year you've got an Indiana and an Illinois. This year also a USC. Next year, who knows, Purdue could be in that mix. It all takes just getting the right player here and there, because obviously they have the coach to get that done. So looking forward to seeing how that moves on. And it will be interesting to see what they can do against USC, because that is going to be a formidable challenge, especially with a team that averages 66 points a game. Now, obviously, that is two games, and those numbers will go down substantially as the season progresses. But what are your thoughts going into that game with this team coming out? What are they going to have to do to slow the Trojans' offense down?
Yeah, well, I think so. Last week we saw Purdue in the first two drives. Southern Illinois just marched down the field immediately. The first drive was, I think, a 10-play, 75-yard drive. I don't remember how much time it took off. Then they immediately followed that up with a 3-play, 75-yard touchdown drive. So Purdue, their defense looked ugly to start that game, but they were able to kind of settle down. And after the game, they said, you know, Barry Odom said it was a lack of execution, a lack of communication. And so once they were able to kind of get that figured out, they settled down. And then, like I said, I think the rest of the game, Southern Illinois had about 100 yards of total offense in, you know, from the second quarter through the end of the game. But Purdue can't start like that. They can't afford to do that against a highly explosive USC offensive team. I think on offense, we've seen Purdue in week one, they threw for 311 yards against Ball State. This last week, they made it a point to run the football. Devin Mockaby had 32 carries for 126 yards, really emphasizing getting push on the offensive line. I think what Purdue's going to have to do, and I think the reason they tried to run the football so much last week, is they understand that they need to control the clock as much as they can. So that means no turnovers. Limit your three and outs, even if it's a 8-play drive where you have to end up punting. At least you're able to take 4 or 5 minutes off the clock and keep that USC offense on the sideline. So I think you're going to, I think you'll see Purdue take some chances in this game. I think they know that they've got to hit some big plays in order to win this game. But at the same time, I think they're going to try to run the football, make USC's defense work. And then again, on the defensive side, they can't give up those big plays. They got to keep USC's receivers in check. And I believe they've also got the top running back in the Big Ten. So just a dominant offensive team. And it's going to be a big test for this Purdue defense that, again, really hasn't faced a challenging opponent yet.
Yeah, and as pointed out, Vegas has USC as a 20.5-point favorite, which that means I wonder what the over-under in that game is. It's got to be up around the upper 50s.
I thought it was 58.5 the last I checked.
Boy, I nailed that, didn't I?
You did.
and that's with – and that's with USC averaging 66 points a game.
Right.
So they're counting on a few less points by USC and some points by Purdue. But we'll certainly have to see. More positive is as we get closer to the basketball season, which we're not really that close yet. What is it? September 11th. So we're still a month away from just the opening of college basketball. But I know that everybody is waiting for that. Purdue fans are waiting for that, as they are one of the, I'd call them a co-favorite with Michigan this year in the to win the Big Ten. I personally think Michigan is going to be a better team, but hey, that's why they play the games. Don't know who else is going to be what. USC, or not USC, but Illinois. With all their Eastern European players and whatnot. We'll talk more about that with Dustin as we come back here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Dustin Schutte with us, back with more right after these messages.
Welcome back,
Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday. Dustin Schutte with us from the Purdue SI site. Dustin, how do people find all of your content?
Yeah, if you go to si.com/college/Purdue, or you can follow me on X. It's at Schutte Dustin, and you can find all of the Purdue content. We've got some USC stuff up there too. I'm going to plug one story here because I'm shameless like that, Jim.
That's what we're here.
That was a couple weeks ago. Was able to talk to Drew Brees because oddly enough, his first start
What's that? They call me the Breeze.
There you go.
I keep rolling down the road.
I was able to talked to him. The last time Purdue and USC played was 1998. That was Drew Brees' first start. They ended up losing that game 27-17, but I kind of asked, and we went down memory lane a little bit and talked about his first start. It was 120 degrees out that day. That was the kind of the day when Joe Tiller said, "Guys, I think we found our quarterback." So it was just kind of cool to
So it must have been 120 degrees out.
There you go. Whoa. Or Purdue could have used a cool breeze that day.
Man, there was all, man, they didn't use any of that stuff, man. They could have said, it's 100 degrees at Rossade Stadium.
Yeah, the only one I remember is there was something about something like a swift breeze coming to Pasadena when they clinched the Rose Bowl. There was something along that about a breeze through Pasadena. That was the only one I remember. But yeah, there were a lot of good jokes in there at some point. And when he was in New Orleans, I think he earned the nickname Breezes, which I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, it's always good. That's another. It's so many great quarterbacks. He was known as quarterback, the cradle of quarterbacks for so long. You go back to Bob Greasy. What did Len Dawson go there?
Yes. Len Dawson, Gary Danielson, Mark Herman.
Gary Danielson?
Yep.
The guy on TV that's been on TV forever?
Yes, he went to Purdue. He'll be back there this week, actually. He's covering the game with Brad Nessler on CBS.
Ah, wow. Did not know that. But then you had Bob Greasy. And my favorite, though, is Jim Everett.
Jim Everett, yep.
But it's because when he was on the Jim Rome show.
Jim Rome show, yep.
And I was just talking about this with someone last night. And for those of you that don't remember, when Jim Rome, he's the only, and I apologize because I know I follow him on Fort Wayne, on our affiliate 1380 The Fan in Fort Wayne, but Jim Rome has just not been someone that I've ever really listened to or cared to listen to. I don't know why. It just maybe it's his demeanor, but it was capsulized when he had Jim Everett on, and he was calling him Chris Everett, or Chrissy Everett. I can't remember. And Jim Everett said, "Dude, if you do that again," I forget what he said, but basically, we're going to have a problem. And I think he said, "Okay, Chris." And Jim Everett just got up and knocked him the hell off of his chair, off of the stage. And I loved it. I loved the hell out of that. It was great. But that's my favorite move ever by a Purdue quarterback. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I've seen that clip multiple times. And you know the rumor. Sorry, I'm trying to get over this cough that I've had. Do you believe it was staged or was it authentic? That seems to be
that was authentic.
I think so too. I think that was authentic too. But there are people that believe it was a staged situation.
Yeah, I have always, of course, I never thought that. I'm not a conspiracist, so I'm always last on the conspiracy theories
and wagon.
Whatever we're talking about. But I love that. But hey. Is what it is, but Purdue is hoping to get things turned around on the football field. And rep share, like I said earlier, it's got to help. Have you seen a difference? Are they being able to bring in better players? I know they didn't get a ton. They got some guys I was a little surprised at, but with the coaching change, that hurts. You can bring some guys with you, but usually you're not going to have tons of them coming in.
Right. I don't know that we've noticed it yet. I think what Barry Odom did was when he got the job at Purdue, he, you know, took some kids from UNLV. He was at Arkansas for a few years. So if he coached some of those kids there, any of those kids that entered the transfer portal, he reached out to. So I don't know that Purdue could have been that picky, especially when you're trying to recruit, you know, 50 plus kids from the transfer portal. So I think the players on the team are better than most of the players they had last year. Now, again, they had Will Helt, who's now at Clemson. They had Dylan Thienemann, who's now at Oregon. Max Clare, who's playing for Ohio State. So they had some good players on that team. But I think overall, he brought in a really skilled roster. I don't know that Rev Shear had that much to do with it, but we'll see. This is, you know, he basically has kind of followed that Kurt Cignetti model where he said, we're not going to take a backseat to anybody when it comes to revenue share. Now, what I can tell you, Jim, is, and I think I have this correct, Purdue is basically investing in the, you know, their four most prominent sports, football, men's basketball, women's basketball, and then volleyball. But I think that they have, it's a little bit less than that 75% for the football side and a little more of the, and a little more than 15% for the men's basketball side. I don't know the specific numbers. The athletic director hasn't gotten into those specific numbers, but that's kind of what he said, is that we're going to spend a little bit more on men's basketball, a little bit less on football, but we're still going to be highly competitive in both of those sports. So I think Purdue will be competitive. I don't know that we've seen it yet. I'm going to be really interested to see how that works this offseason when they go to the transfer portal. Because, again, Barry Odom has talked about wanting to build this through a high school recruiting base and then add pieces via the transfer portal, almost the same way Matt Painter does it on the basketball side. Will he be able to do that? Or, you know, at the end of the season, if Purdue has a good season, has some good players, are other teams going to come in and try to poach those guys? I think that that's going to be the big question mark after this year.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they kind of pulled off of football, because that's the money maker. That's the engine that drives the train in every Power Four conference team. And if you're not making the money there and not putting all of your eggs in that basket, it's going to hurt the athletics department. Because while basketball is great, it's huge in Indiana. Purdue is on just a great run right now. It's still not the money maker that football is.
No, I agree. And so I don't know. The other thing I don't know is what their NIL situation is like for those sports as well. There could be some other money coming in that helps compensate for that on the football side. I legitimately don't know the numbers or the figures to that. So there could be other factors at play. But I think the success of the men's basketball team, the fact that, and maybe this is on a year-to-year basis, Jim, I really don't know. Because the basketball team probably needed to spend a little bit more in order to keep everybody on their roster that they wanted to keep. Trey Kaufman, Wren, Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, CJ Cox, Jakari Harris, Daniel Jacobson, and then bring in some of those guys from the transfer portal if they want to make a national title push. So again, it's a 1 year thing where we got to spend a little bit more on the basketball side. They've earned it. They've had the success. We want to put together a championship level roster. And then maybe next year, they're going to go back and, you know, fund a little bit more into football. I'm not sure. Again, Mike Babinski did not get into the specifics of that. I just know that for at least this year, the NIL or the rev share was a little bit higher on the basketball side, a little bit lower on the football side. But in terms of percentages or total money, we don't know what that was. At least right now, we don't.
And I'm wondering, why would they do that with the success that they've been having in basketball? And obviously, success brings better NIL. So they were already in a decent position, I think, there. Not in one of the tops, but good enough. Why they would, with football not being where it needed to be and having to fight that uphill battle to get there, why they would cut that, which I know that's not something that you know, but it makes me, I wonder why they would do that.
Well, I wondered how much of a difference it actually would have made. And I say that because you're trying to convince a bunch of players to come to a 1-11 program that has completely overhauled its staff and its roster. So they may have not viewed it as quite as important, because if Barry Odom is bringing guys in from UNLV, Purdue's in a better situation probably than UNLV is in terms of their NIL. I mean, obviously rev share, and it depends on if schools are going to fully participate or not. And then, you know, you've got other schools that maybe guys weren't making as much money, but if they come into Purdue and they get a starting job or have a more prominent role, maybe they'll be able to earn a little bit more money. So I don't know how it all worked. I think that there's some level of, well, we're not going to get guys from Ohio State or Oregon, you know, we're not going to get that type of player anyway. So, you know, let's maybe trim some costs here and try to keep our basketball team intact. It's all so new, Jim, that I have no understanding of how it works, other than somebody asked Mike Babinski the question, and that was basically his response.
Yeah, and I understand wanting to keep that train going. It makes me wonder, where are they?
See,
are
good pun right there.
There you go. wonder why they are they in as good a shape NIL wise in basketball as we think that they are, or are they not there and they're having to kind of make up for that?
I think they are there, but I think that the demand was so high for some of those guys. Like there have been rumors the last 2 years about big time programs that have been wanting Braden Smith. You know, Fletcher, there's some guys that that are young freshmen that made an impact last season that, you know, if they don't think they're going to play a whole lot, they might be more enticed to go play for another program. So, I think that their NIL is fine. The way it's been explained to me, because again, I'm still trying to figure out how to get in the right channels and figure out some of this stuff, but Purdue is in a much better spot in NIL than people think. It's just it's just not as out there as you might think. So I think Purdue's football
out there, like the astronauts, are they getting out there like from the astronauts?
Now, I don't know that. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what how accurate it is, but it seems to be pretty well known that Indiana's NIL is, if not the best, it's one of the top three in the country. So, but I don't know where Purdue would stand on that. It's very hard to figure that stuff out on the Purdue side. So I legitimately just don't know, but I think that I'm not saying they're the best or even top 10, but I just think that a lot of people look at Purdue and like, oh, smaller schools, smaller fan base. Maybe they don't have as much money coming in, but I don't think that's the case. I think that they're very competitive in that market. And that's all I say, that people think that they just don't have the same level of funding as some of these other schools. And I don't think that that's quite the case.
Yeah, Big Ten overall, football-wise, this year we've got, right now, three of the top four AP teams in the Big Ten. Then Indiana and Illinois, and Michigan's hanging on, but I think Michigan's a hanger-oner after this weekend. No offense, but I think USC will be in the top 25. Because I think they are a top 25 team, and they're kind of at a disadvantage. Although we have seen Indiana's a perfect example. They didn't start the season in the top 25 a year ago,
right,
but managed to get up to the top five at one point. So you can climb up as the season progresses, as teams lose, teams move. If Indiana gets a win over a top 10 Illinois team this weekend, that will boost them, obviously. But the SEC has 11 stinking teams in the top 25 right now. I don't know if that's bias or
yes,
if because it has to be this early on. You don't know. We still don't know who's what. These teams are still developing. It takes a while to develop. Illinois looks great so far. They look like a world beater. They go down to Duke and wins solidly. I think Indiana wins that game against Illinois next week. But, hey, you got to play the games. That's why you got to play them. But the Big Ten overall, still not as deep as the SEC, I think. But they're a little deeper besides the top three, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State. Michigan's at the bottom. Indiana, Illinois, USC, then maybe Michigan. I think Michigan will win on the games that Michigan wins this year will be defense oriented because they've got a freshman quarterback and they're just not quite there yet. I think whether there'll be any surprises out of the Big Ten other than those teams this year, we'll have to wait and see.
Well, to the point about the SEC bias, this is the reason I believe that. First of all, Florida was ranked number 13 this season. They have not been very good in the last three or four years. Well,
Are they out of the top 25 already?
Yes, because they lost to USF, but they were number 13. They went 8-5 last year. There was nothing on their resume really last year that makes you say this is an automatic top 25 team. Now, if they would have started the season 3-0 and you want to bump them in there, Auburn, again, a team that hasn't been good in the past, they beat Baylor, big whoop. Baylor's not very good. And they beat Ball State 42-3, and they're all of a sudden
Alabama,
in the top 25.
Alabama's,
they're still in the top 25.
They started as a top 19. 10 team, and what happened to them?
Yeah, they got clobbered. So it's just, for whatever reason, we enter the season and a lot of these AP voters just put a bunch of SEC teams in there because they're supposed to be good. Now, the SEC does a really good job of talking a big game. And so maybe the Big Ten needs to improve on this. I don't really know. But you just look and it's like, if Indiana was in the same spot as Florida or Auburn, would they be ranked? No, it'd take them 5 or 6 games before they cracked the top 25 if they were in a similar situation. So that's kind of just the stuff that irritates me about the top 25. But ultimately, it doesn't matter because, you know, these aren't the rankings that matter. Those come out in, what, the first week of November?
Yeah, and Indiana, as well, even though they did climb like they did last year, it was constantly with scrutiny. Constantly because all their schedule. They don't play anybody. Even though they were beating the crap out of everybody they played, and they were, you know, between Indiana and Miami last year, the top offensive team in the country. They had one of the top defensive units in the country, allowing the least amount of rushing yards, but yet they still kept getting scrutinized. But that won't be the case this year, as their schedule is plenty tough. Illinois, followed by road games at Iowa, at Oregon. Oregon, I think, personally, best team in the country, best team in the Big Ten.
Sure.
I think they are number one. I don't know how good Ohio State is.
I agree with you on that.
They beat a Texas team that I don't know how good they are because Arch Manning is all fluff. And I was looking at the Heisman. I'm a Heisman voter, and I always keep up with everything in that regard. He's in a Heisman poll like 6th, and I'm like, why? What the hell has he done? Look, even his stats this year are just mediocre. But because his last name's Manning, he's up there. And I find it a complete and utter joke. And I'm not saying Fernando Mendoza, per se, the Indiana's quarterback, should be there. But he's nowhere to be mentioned, yet Mel Kiper Jr. has touted him as potentially the number one pick in the NFL draft. Now, he hasn't shown that just yet, although last week it got a lot better. He's still familiarizing himself with this offense, even though they've been together, since summer. But it takes a while, and it's all the same. The Heisman has become a team trophy. Who you almost have to be on the best team to win that, and I am utterly disappointed by that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, I do have some sympathy for Arch Manning because he didn't ask for any of that. The expectations were just placed on him because he was at Texas and because his last name is Manning. So, I'm with you. I would like to see Ohio State play Texas in week like 6 or 7. Because we just don't know. There's not a lot to take away. That was his first road game, first game of the season. You know, Ohio State could be really good, but I don't feel that way after watching that game. There was nothing that stood out to me that was like, oh boy, they're going to be a national championship contender this year. Now, I think they're still one of the best teams in the Big Ten and the country, but are they the best team? I don't know. I'm with you. I think Oregon deserves that number one spot after the whooping they put on Oklahoma State last week.
We'll find out. I think they've got a great game coming up. I'll have to look at the schedule. But, brother, appreciate you as always, and always look forward to it. It is fun. We still got to get you on more because we've got to do some shootyisms and have some non-sports talk, man.
Well, can I stick around for Matt Taylor?
Yeah, Matt is coming up later. Come back on. Come back, and I'll text you when that's going to be. We've got the IU Athletics Director up next, Scott Dolson.
Perfect.
So, but yes, you can absolutely join for that. Look forward to it, brother. Dustin Schutte from Purdue SI back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, coming to you on this Thursday. Glad to have you along. Thanks a lot for joining. Indiana Athletics Director Scott Dolson will be joining us here in this segment. Looking forward to that. Is Indiana football looking at following up a college football playoff season with a repeat performance, and they take on Indiana State this week, which that should be a not much of a challenge, but that changes next week when the Hoosiers will host the Fighting Illini, a top 10 team, ranked number 9 in both polls, coming there, the Illini coming off of a road win at Duke. They're also 2-0 right now, and which expectedly they will be 3-0 after this weekend. And so you'll have 2-4-0 or 3-0 teams going at it in week four, which that game is going to be on national TV as well on NBC, or as was it Pig Face but tell Howard Stern, WNBC, if you were a fan of his movie, which I'm always dropping movie little hints in here, and not everybody gets them. And I wish I would have remembered to bring this up when Mike DeCourcy was on with us this Tuesday, because he had been off for a little bit. And but the previous time he was on, I forget what we were talking about, but he used the word Jermaine. And that instantly just clicked into my brain, because I am a huge Smokey and the Bandit fan, and actually just a huge fan of virtually every single thing that Sheriff Buford T. Justice said in that movie. And in one of those times, he was speaking to another sheriff, and the sheriff says, the fact that you're a Texas sheriff is not germane to the situation. And his response was, what the hell do the Germans got to do with it? And the only person that got this, I'm going to give him a shout out, was Matt Sisley, Trent Sisley's dad. He's the only person that caught that reference, man. So proud. If I had some gifts to give away, I'd give him a gift. But Scott Dolson, the Indiana Athletics Director, looking to join us here in just a few minutes as he gets connected up. He's waiting to connect his microphone and camera as he gets set to join us from most likely his office over at Memorial Stadium. And look, I think he's about ready. Scott, how are you doing, sir?
Great. Good to see you, Jim.
Great. Good to see you, man. I cannot thank you enough. I know you're very, very busy, especially now that the season has started and all that's going on. Thank you so much for your time. You've always been so gracious with us, and I appreciate that.
Thanks for having me.
Man, it's a pleasure. And you've got to be extraordinarily happy right now. I've been thinking about this. The coaching situation at Indiana, this has to be the zenith in the history of IU athletics with the coaches that are in place. And this is not just about Kirk Cignetti, but Indiana now has a football program that is elite, that is competing with the elite, which that has not really happened. They've had success way back, but this is a different deal because this is a different era. So that in and of itself is incredible. I think Darren DeVries is going to do extremely well. And being in Puerto Rico and watching that team play, the first thing I told Todd Leary, Todd is just a huge fan of Indiana basketball with good reason, but he's on with us each Friday. But the first thing I told him was, you are going to really enjoy watching this team play, because they are gritty. They do the things that has not been done probably since he played, with the gritty defense and shooting that three-point ball, man. They are not afraid at all to do that.
They're not. They're definitely not. No, we're super excited. You know, we love our kind of collection of coaches right now. Feel like we've got a really good, not only they fit with each of the programs, but just they're really a good fit together. And so, yeah, couldn't be more excited going to the year this year.
Yeah, and I don't mean to just call out those two programs, because, first of all, Todd Yakeley, he's done okay. Mm-hmm. You know, navigating right now in the college sports world, to have a team that was elite, we've seen programs that have been elite but have been kind of equalized because of this era now of NIL, of rev share. But Indiana soccer has never wavered. They just have maintained and continued to elevate no matter what, currently ranked number one in the country with their best start since 1997. That's incredible. But it's not just that. This past weekend, Angel Escobedo, Indiana's wrestling coach, was inducted into the Indiana Athletics Hall of Fame very deservedly as a former NCAA champion. But what he's done to that program, getting them ranked in the top 25 out of the Big Ten, that is tough. The Big Ten is probably the toughest wrestling conference that there is. To elevate that, incredible. The volleyball program has elevated. The swimming and diving, of course, remains to be elite. So Terry Bourne, women's basketball, that's what the depth of coaches that Indiana has right now has to be the best that it ever has been.
Well, I don't know. That's saying a lot. When you go back to Doc Councilman and Bob Knight and Sam Bell, and, you know, we've had an unbelievably successful coaches both in the Big Ten and nationally. So, you know, it's nice that there's confidence in our coaches right now. The thing that I would say is that our coaches really all have a lot of similarities in terms of having a blueprint to win. We're really a process-oriented department. You have to have a plan and then work that plan. And if it doesn't work, evaluate whether it's a problem with the plan or a problem with the execution. And we try to keep it simple. But you mentioned Todd Yeagley. You know, they're a perfect example of how you build a sustainable program. And regardless of what happens nationally and the changes that have been happening in college athletics, Todd has been able to adapt and stick to the foundation of the program and continue to year after year. Although I tell them all the time, we don't take it for granted. We know that it takes a lot of work. Every year is a new year, but they continue to provide great results. And, you know, I think our other programs around the department sort of look at that as a way to look at their programs and say, that's what we want to become. We want to become programs, not just good teams.
Navigating the new rev share as that took effect July, this past July, which, you know, should equalize a lot of teams. And we've seen the equalization. That's last year. College football may have had its greatest season ever. And you had teams like Indiana that were able to grow and others that were able to grow and participate in the upper level. But it is, how difficult has navigating this rev share been for you? Because I know that is very difficult. You have to make hard decisions and still try to manage all of the different programs.
Yeah, it's certainly challenging, but we looked at it as an opportunity. You know, the challenge is it's a new $20.5 million expense item that hit our budget that there's not really an associated revenue line that just automatically covered that. So we've been working hard the past two or three years on really being efficient from a budget standpoint, controlling expenses without inhibiting our chance to compete. At the same time, driving revenue. Our fans have certainly responded. We try to keep all of our prices very fair in the market. But again, to compete, we have to generate the revenue to fund the entire department, which now includes revenue share. In addition, Jim, just trying to make certain that our coaches understand how to budget their revenue share, how to make certain in the recruiting process, how that, as we've studied best practices, whether it's in pro sports and looking how different teams budget their resources, to make certain we're on the cutting edge of that as well, so that we can field teams that certainly are highly competitive and are adapting to the modern world we're in. So where we are today, I feel really, really good about it. I feel like we're continuing to learn. We certainly don't have it all figured out. There's certain outside NIL pressure still, in addition to the revenue share that we fund internally. But I'm confident that we'll continue to adapt. And, you know, we're never going to be the school that just says, you know, hey, this is something that's a negative. It's a positive. It's something that's a new benefit for student athletes. And we want to be great at that, just like we want to be great at graduating our student athletes and great at competing on the field.
And I know managing NIL or the rev share is difficult enough, but now the coaches have to also, as you mentioned, be a part of that. Man, they all have a ton to do. We all know how many hours, say, like Kurt Cignetti puts in, getting in at 5:30, leaving at 10 o'clock at night. And now to add rev share into that, especially, I'll use football as an example. Wow, how difficult that has to be. You've got I don't know, upwards of 100 players. Not all of them are, you know, as impacted, but that's a bunch of decisions that have to be made that has to go over with each player. That in and of itself is like a job.
Yeah, we've had to really adapt in our department just from an infrastructure standpoint to be able to handle. There's a decision-making part, how to allocate revenue share, how to deal with NIL, but there's also just the infrastructure. Stephen Harper, our deputy AD, has been incredible in terms of he turned around probably 110 contracts within 45 days and working with our general counsel's office on campus and processing those. And we hired Jeremiah Gutyar, former men's soccer player who was with on Todd Yigley's staff. He's a Kelley School Business Finance major to really work hard at analytics and putting together kind of all the data and all the information we need as we're making these decisions and supporting Coach Sig or Terry Morin or Darren DeVries so that when we're allocating these funds, we've got some good hard information to back up these decisions. So, yeah, I feel like we've been preparing for it. And you know, we don't know what's going to happen yet tomorrow or a month from now, but we try to look around the corner as best we can and be ready. And again, as I said earlier, Jim, we look at this as an opportunity for us to really grow as a department and to continue to try to, we want to make sure our department is thriving in the Big Ten and therefore nationally. And so we feel good about where we are right now, but we certainly have to keep working at it and finding additional sources of revenue.
Yeah. Are there times where players are negotiating during these things, or do they have people in there doing that?
Most of them have people doing that. Yeah, I would say very rarely would an individual player be talked to directly or negotiated. Either they have an agent or a parent, family member who is working on their behalf. And we encourage that because it's big business. You know, it's a new thing. And so we've got a standard agreement that we worked on with the Big Ten that we can change a few things within that agreement. There's a template that we use from a contract standpoint. And again, Stephen Harper heads that up. And so we work hard at communicating the best we can. And in addition, you saw with the Merchants Bank deal, Jim, you know, financial literacy.
I'm just going to ask about that next.
Yeah, that's certainly important to, I'm not turning a positive into a negative. When we're sharing this much revenue, it's a positive for our students that are receiving it. But at the same time, there are things that come along with that create a great deal of responsibility. So we're doing all we can particularly as we recruit student athletes, to show that we want the well-rounded picture for the student athlete, and we're educating them the best we can so they can use this opportunity to wisely and to really help them for their future.
Yeah, it's so important because I promise you, if I was 18 years old and someone was giving me the money that some of these guys are making, I would probably have been a complete idiot.
yes.
No question about that. And so it's difficult, but it's also amazing to see the level of maturity today of a lot of these guys. They're further along than definitely that I was, but that a lot of people were back then. So it's great to see. And it's the level of player that's coming in. Back in the day, and not just saying it, Indiana, everywhere, you always saw players getting in trouble, always out doing something. Man, that has really just been mitigated. I don't know if this has something to do with it, but that has really just gone away, which that in and of itself is amazing because that's a lot of people across the sports world just on one campus alone. But to really, it can tell that they're more serious, they're more mature, they take things more seriously.
Well, I knock on wood as you say that, because you never know. You know, every night you worry that we do still have 18 to 22, 23 year old young people that you know can put themselves at times in challenging situations. But to our coaches' credit, across the board, you know, we certainly look at character and we dive deep into our recruiting process. And so, you know, I think, you know, overall, I'm not saying we're perfect, but we really have good kids and coaches who understand, again, the big picture. You know, we want student athletes to maximize the financial aspect of college athletics today. But at the same time, we want them to want their degree. We want them to want to participate at a major university like ours and take advantage of all those opportunities that it presents. And, you know, that's really, really important. We don't want it to become transactional, Jim. That it's just that we're paying the amount. It's an auction. We're going to pay this amount and we're kind of renting you for this year. And then we move on. We have no interest in that. And honestly, student athletes that maybe that's what they're interested in is probably not the best fit for us, regardless of what program it is. So, you know, behavior problems, issues like that, you hope you can take care of that in the recruiting process, that you're recruiting the right kids, but also through our educational and all of our learning life skills and et cetera that we do through our Excellence Academy, we try to prepare all of our student athletes for some of the forks in the road where they've got to make a right decision or a wrong decision. We do all we can to prepare them for that, particularly now that it's a new world they're living in.
And while all this is going on, you still have to maintain things like facilities. And mm-hmm. that has always been a race and has gotten even more so far. And one of the biggest questions for Indiana football, I guess, would be getting a new press box. And I always tell people when I say press box, it's just the name for it, because that would be the least important part of that facility, whatever you want to call it, because that would be more about suites. We've seen trying to right now, until that happens, you've got the suites in the end zone and then a few other new suites, and obviously very popular. Those things sell out. And I know that it's on the board somewhere. What kind of a timeline are we looking at for a press box renovation, and how long would that take?
You know, that's a great question. We've been, it's been pretty publicly out there. We've been studying it for a while now, and we're still in the process of developing what that master plan might look like in terms of a major renovation. In the meantime, as you alluded to, we've done several, when I call them little, they're still have a major impact, whether it's the East Side Club or whether it's the new flower box suites we put in. We continue to invest in facilities like the Mellencamp Pavilion, which has been totally, completely renovated. To try to make certain we do those types of things while we plan for the whether it's a new press box that, again, has a new club, loge area. There's lots of different opportunities to increase your premium seating, which drives revenue. But candidly, Jim, our priorities are first and foremost that we can make sure we can generate the revenue and fund our student athletes, whether it's revenue share or help drive outside NIL to be able to compete in the recruiting world we live in. We want to retain our coaches, which is critical. And then third, we want to make certain that we can, particularly where we need to modernize our facilities, like potentially Memorial Stadium, particularly the fan experience, restrooms. You know, the Illinois game is sold out. Certainly we want to get through Indiana State Friday, but the Illinois game, we want to make sure we have the infrastructure in place to handle crowds so the fan experience is extremely positive, both around the stadium and in the stadium itself. So, I'm as you can tell, I'm kind of evading to give you a specific timeline on that, because the reality of it as well is it's a fundraising equation that we'll have to figure out. We need that lead gift, like when we got Simon Scott Assembly Hall, when Cindy Simon Scott stepped up. That just sent that project on a fast track. And so we're working on that, certainly with Memorial Stadium as well. And we'll see what's next for Merchants Bank Field at Memorial Stadium.
So if anybody out there wants to have their name on the press box, it's pretty easy to get that accomplished, but you just got to write that check, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Recently, the SEC finally agreed to go to 9 conference games to equalize at least what the Big Ten is doing. The ACC is still behind. The Big 12 is at, I think, 9 conference games already. So that now, besides the ACC, which they are going to have to, I think, get on board with that, although their football has just really been weakened here in the last few years. So I kind of understand why they're lagging. But with that, the SEC also is still maintaining their requirement to play a Power 4 team. Mm-hmm. I expect that the Big Ten is going to follow suit. This takes effect for the SEC next season. I don't know how quickly, but I would certainly imagine the Big Ten is going to have to follow suit with that.
Yeah, we discuss football scheduling, as you can imagine, with our AD meetings a lot. And, you know, we're certainly glad to see the SEC. We've got a great relationship with the SEC, just both of our leagues, our group of athletic directors. I've got several close friends in the SEC, their athletic directors, and we're really excited for them to kind of bring that part of their football scheduling to some closure. I know they've talked about going to 9 games for a while now. From our end, you know, it's all about access to postseason. And as the CFP unfolds in terms of the future of that, I think that will be the determining factor on how our scheduling sort of evolves. And so, you know, certainly we want to put the Big Ten Conference in the best position we can possibly for postseason success. And so here, specific to Indiana, you know, our scheduling has really been built on studying other schedules around the country and determining for where we are with our program, what's the best place to put us in the best position possible for postseason. And as again, postseason requirements change, we'll adapt. And Coach Sig and I talk about that regularly as well. But having played in the Big Ten East for so long, and I'm not complaining about that, but you can see where you can schedule yourself in and out of good and bad seasons just by making maybe the wrong move here, wrong move there. So we take it with the highest level of seriousness. We study it in depth. And I talked to Commissioner Petitti about it a lot. And, you know, candidly, I'm not going to apologize for our schedule at all right now. I feel like we're scheduling to put ourselves in the best position possible to compete in the Big Ten and to compete for postseason bursts, wherever that might be.
Well, I've said it all the time. This season, no one can talk about it. I just from an outside standpoint, non-biased, I'm like, shut up with this scheduling talk. A, this year, I don't care who they play in the non-conference season because you've got an opening Big Ten game, although it's at home, against a top 10 Illinois team that most people have earmarked them to make the CFP. Then you have a road game at Iowa, one of the toughest places to play on the road. Then a road game at Oregon. So Indiana has a very rough 3-game stretch coming up that if they can get through that, even if they were 5-1, whether they go 6-0, but even if they're 5-1, that to me puts them on a path to get back to the college football playoff. How much of an impact, how big was that for the university, for like last year, all the pub that Indiana got, they're on TV all the time, College Game Day, Fox Noon, big kickoff. Kurt Cignetti was the darling to everybody, coach of the year. How much of an impact did that have for the school and program overall?
Oh, yeah, it was massive in so many ways. And we felt we really needed to get off to a good start last year. And we, you know, we accomplished that. Now, having said that, we don't want to be a one-hit wonder. I've said it publicly. I've said it a lot. You know, we don't feel like we're all of a sudden made it. We feel like we've got to continue to claw our way to a level every year that we can have continued stack good season after good season. And, you know, that's the way Coach Sig thinks. That's the way I think. We're not cocky about it. We don't think, as I said, that we're all of a sudden some football powerhouse. We think we can continue to do the things that we have laid out in our blueprint and in our process to be highly competitive, be a place that young men want to come here to play for the staff we have, for Coach Sig, and to compete at the highest levels. And as Coach Sig said since he got here, we are setting no limitations on this program whatsoever. But we also understand it's strategic. There's got to be a plan. There's got to be a lot of hard work, and it's not just something you can just snap your fingers and think you've made it. You know, he's paranoid about being complacent, and I feel the same way. It's kind of how my career's been, and so we fit great together. You know, President Witten's been amazing. She's aligned, and so you know we'll continue to be super strategic in how we, whether it's scheduling, whether it's how we handle our facilities, recruiting, revenue share, NIL, everything that we're doing is a part of a plan to get our program to a consistent level that we all had always dreamed of. And that's we're on a mission to do that. But again, I can't say enough, Jim, and I don't want to be repetitive, but I don't want anybody to think we're like the smartest people in the room and we've got it all figured out and that we just think that we're fat and happy. We really have a lot of work to do, and we're going to continue to do that, and we'll be relentless to get our program where we want to be.
Well, Sig said they are the emerging power in college football. So there you go.
That's the plan.
And I've just got to tell you again, I cannot thank you enough. The changes that have gone on under your leadership and how the school is going forward, the positivity, you're obviously doing a tremendous job. And I know how difficult that is because that's like juggling 18 different things at once. And actually more than that, however many teams there are, I know you have assistants, but you're the captain of the ship, and the captain is the guy who makes the call. So congratulations on how things are going and the direction that all the programs are going.
Well, I appreciate it, Jim. And you know, honestly, I feel extremely fortunate to have this opportunity. You know, not many people get to play a role like this at a school that they grew up loving and as a fan. And so for me, you know, I'm honored to have this job. I never, ever, even in the toughest days when the challenges are big, I never, ever, you know, think that I wish I was doing something else. I just feel extremely fortunate, and I just want to do the best job I possibly can for our school. And I know that's the way our staff feels. And, you know, I couldn't be more proud of our staff in the department. I think we're really aligned and, you know, want our student athletes to have an incredible experience. We want to make certain that we can compete. We talk about winning a lot because I think winning is not just something that happens. You have to have a plan for it, as I keep repeating myself on that. And, you know, I want our fans, our alumni, to be super proud when they put that IU shirt on or that IU hat. I want them to have a tremendous sense of pride of our school, and that we're maybe the front door that shows in all the other great things happening in Indiana University, because I think we've got just amazing times happening right here just across all of our campuses. So anyway, that sounds kind of Pollyannish, but that's how I feel. So I feel very fortunate to be here. And even though the times are transformational, you know, I think I'll look back someday and say, wow, what an unbelievable time to be in this position. And you know, I hope that at some point when I leave that we're in a position where we can really continue to thrive like we always have.
And I said, this is the last thing. Just as a person, having been around IU Athletics as long as you have, mm-hmm. the manager on the basketball back in the 80s, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, 84 to 88.
Don't want to overstate your – I think mm-hmm. we might be the same age. But how shocked were you at what happened on the football field last year as a person with knowing – you went through the Bill Mallory era as I did – but boy, it had been up and down, but to see it take that rocket ship, all of us, what was it like for you just as a person that had been through IU Athletics for that long?
You know, for me, it was just super rewarding to see a plan come together. And honestly, everything that Coach Sig said that he would do during the interview process in his first month on the job, it all came to fruition. And certainly I didn't just expect that we were going to go 11-1, but it was really more how we executed, how we practiced, how we prepared for games, how we handled adversity, how our sidelines looked. Everything about the process for me was super rewarding to see that there is – I always believe that we can build a winning program here. And certainly Bill Mallory showed that we had great years under Bill Mallory, but to have consistent success, whether it's, we talked about Todd Yeagley, Jim, we look back at my years as a manager under Bob Knight, you just have to have a plan and a process and be really convicted to that. And so last year for me was really rewarding to see all that planning come to fruition, and it really worked well. And I thought, I'll just end it with this. I don't want to ramble on it, but this is really a cool thing for me that I believe it was the Nebraska game at halftime. I walked by Urban Meyer. I think Fox Big Noon was here, and Urban Meyer was here. And I met him before. I really didn't know him, but he knew I was the athletic director, and he grabbed me. He pulled me aside, and he said, let me just tell you something. What's happening here is amazing, and you have one of the most well-prepared, best-coached teams in the country. And I just hope you recognize that. And I said, you know, coming from you, that means a lot. And he goes, no, I'm not just saying that. He said, I love what's happening here. And I've seen great football before, how you guys coach and prepare, and it's elite. And that really was super cool when you have someone, he didn't need to say that. He wasn't blowing smoke, but you know, that's what it takes, hard work. It takes a plan and being able to then adapt. And so anyway, it was super fulfilling last year, and you get a taste of that and you want it more. And that's why we're paranoid not to get complacent and try to keep figuring it out. Because again, as great as it was last year, we need to continue to double down, because we just don't want to feel like, hey, we got this all figured out, let's move on to something else. We got to really keep working and continue to try to build this program.
Yeah, Indiana has the game with Indiana State tomorrow night, and then the game that everybody is waiting for to really get the Big Ten going. Illinois game sold out. National television, 7:30 on NBC, another opportunity for Indiana to show off itself. And I know all the fans are looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to that game. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. And just knowing that Indiana is in a position to, this is the first time that I can recall a team like that, a top 10 team coming into Memorial Stadium, that Indiana has not only a chance to beat, I think that they will win that game, but regardless, just the thought that has not happened ever. I mean, when back 4 or 5 years ago, when Ohio State would come in and you're like, yeah, we'll see, but it's all going great. I cannot thank you enough. I don't want to take up all your time.
No problem.
You have been so great and always gracious, Scott. I appreciate you, sir. And congratulations as always.
Well, thanks to you, Jim, for all your great work and getting the IU brand out there and helping to promote IU athletics. And I'll just end it, too, by just thanking our fans, because our fans have been incredible through thick and thin. And again, having been here a long time, you know, I can just sit here all day and talk about the support we have. And it all comes together at the same time. You not only need elite coaches and elite student athletes, but that we have an elite fan base, and they've been here regardless. And so it's the most rewarding thing about last football season, and Coach Sega said this too, was seeing the look on our fans' face when they had so much confidence in our program. And I literally had longtime season ticket holders emotional coming up to me because they enjoyed seeing the success we had. So we want to build on that. We've got a ton of respect for Illinois. They have a phenomenal program. Their AD's first class, and their whole program is. So everybody's got to be ready for that game, because it's going to be a tough Big Ten matchup, but can't wait to see Memorial Stadium rocking that night.
Absolutely. Scott Dolson, the Indiana Athletics Director, kind enough to join us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Appreciate you, my friend.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jim. You take care.
You too. More coming up. Matt Taylor from the Colts will join us, and Dustin will rejoin as well after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Thursday, and joined by our good friend, the voice of the Colts, Matthew Taylor. How are you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, good. Dustin Schutte with us from Purdue SI as well. And, man, you've got to be in a great mood. Everybody at the Colts facility has to be in a great mood. I know Coach Steichen's got to be in a great mood because, first of all, his decision to go with Daniel Jones, which was met with some criticism, is now he's like, what do you think about me? How do you like me now? Not only did the Colts get off the schneid with a streak that I still couldn't believe, that not having won their opener since 2013, they did it in big fashion. They beat the living crap out of Tua Tagovailoa and the Miami Dolphins and almost shut them out. The defense did a tremendous job, allowing just some garbage points, but putting up over 30 and winning that game, what a start for the Colts season, man.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth, man. It's like that scene from Good Will Hunting where Will, you know, slaps that note on top of the window right there. He says, how you like them apples? You know what I'm saying? It was a really good by Daniel Jones. I mean, all the decisions for the Colts, at least through 1 week, right? I mean, it's a marathon. You got 16 more to go. But at least through one game, you know, all of the major decisions the Colts made in the offseason were validated, you know, going to a new scheme on defense, you know, deciding to go with Daniel Jones at quarterback, the great decision in the draft to pick up Tyler Warren. It all paid off, you know, big time dividends in the first game of the season. And so it was really fun to see it all kind of come together. I mean, it seems like it was just last Sunday, right? So only about 4 or 5 days ago, but it seems like it's ancient history now, because now it's on time or on to the Denver Broncos in week 2. But at least for one game, it was fantastic. The weather was beautiful. The crowd was great. Jim Irsay goes in the Ring of Honor at halftime. The Colts play out of their minds. Daniel Jones is fantastic. The defense is creating three takeaways and all kinds of havoc and confusing Tua, like you said, like you mentioned, Jim. So it was a really, really fun day at the Ball Yard. And the best part about it was, again, as you mentioned, you eradicate that incredibly bizarre streak of not being able to win in the first game of the season, first week one win since 2013. And now they're trying to get to a get off to a 2-0 start for the first time since 2009.
Yeah, and they've got the Denver Broncos coming in, which had, they didn't win greatly, but they beat the Titans, who ironically will be Indiana or the Colts' first divisional game, which last year the schedule was really front-loaded with a lot of divisional games. This year it's not. It's front-loaded with all of the non-divisional games for the most part, except for that Titans game. But this is going to be a pretty good challenge, it looks like.
Yeah, for sure. And I like the fact that the division games, just off a little bit of a tangent of what you're talking about, I love the fact that the division games are backloaded, because it seems like, you know, to your point, the last couple of years, the Colts would always have a marquee series with a division opponent that was done before Halloween. And that's a tough thing. I mean, if you got some key injuries, or if you don't get off to a good start, which has been the case for the Colts the last couple of years, there's not a lot of margin for error in the back end of the season, and you don't get those head-to-head opportunities to, you know, you get a win and an opponent in your division getting a loss. You know, those division games always count as two, as they say. So I like the fact that it's kind of backloaded. But as it relates to this game, this is a monster game because it's an AFC game, and I think, you know, both the Dolphins and the Broncos to begin the season at home for the Colts represent potential big-time tiebreaker games, you know, playoff ramification games. Even though they're early on in the season, man, these first two games of the season could hold a lot of weight when you get into playoff scenarios and week, 16, 17, and 18, breaking down all the different situations that have to play out and things that have to go in your favor, like we always tend to do towards the end of the season. The Colts can help themselves big time by getting a couple of these wins, and plus their home games. You want to start off, really, really good and build up a lot of confidence, but they're big in terms of the math as well. And Denver offensively really shaky, defensively just lights out. They only gave up 133 yards of offense to Tennessee last time out, didn't allow a touchdown. Denver had turned the ball over four times and still won, and won pretty comfortably by 8 points, which is really hard to do in the NFL, as you guys know. Tennessee had five drives that started in plus territory, and Denver just completely shut them down. They had a rookie quarterback in Cam Ward. He looked like a rookie making his first start in the NFL. So it's going to be a really tough test. I mean, Daniel Jones was incredibly sharp last time out, 75% completion percentage, had one of the best games of his career. It's a really stiff test in week number two, and maybe one of the toughest defenses the Colts will face all year early on in the season.
Matt, I listened to the pregame show, and you had a chance to interview Cam Bynum. And I think it's funny because a lot of times when you talk with players, you tend to get those politically correct answers or just standard run-of-the-mill type of responses. But he was very detailed. And I just was thinking he was a very cerebral in his responses. He knew what he was talking about. He got into the nitty-gritty details during that interview. And then sure enough, he goes out there and is on the receiving end of that first interception. I feel like I don't feel like he was a huge addition that people were talking about in the offseason, but he could be, to me, one of those big-time players. Like, I was impressed with him in the interview, and I was like, this guy might make some plays this season, and sure enough, he makes some big ones in the opener.
Yeah, he was a prized possession for the Colts. I mean, I think you're right. I think nationally, Cam Bynum to the Colts maybe didn't make a ton of ripples, but here locally, it really matters, especially in this defense, especially with his defensive coordinator. And how this defense is going to work, man. If this thing's going to hum, it's going to work from the back end to the front, which is kind of different than most defenses in major college football or the NFL. You know, they always say it's kind of yin and yang, but, you got to get pressure up front, which is still obviously true within this defense. But Lou Anarumo has built up this reputation of being you know, like the mastermind, the mad scientist, you know, putting up a lot of things in the secondary. And you've got all these moving pieces, and you got all these guys barking at each other and communicating on the fly pre-snap at the line of scrimmage. And the quarterback's looking around saying, well, what the hell's going on? You know, this guy's over here and that guy's over here. And then, you know, he's pointing over here. And then here comes the nickel coming down and the safety's backing out the line of scrimmage at the, you know, snap of the football. There's a lot of moving pieces, and that's on purpose. That's by design. There's a lot of, you know, bluff and blitz. There's a lot of disguise and just a lot of game-specific aspects of this defense that you have to have really experienced, communicative secondary players and guys that have a lot of savviness about them, high football IQ. But the biggest thing, as you guys know, you got to have playmakers, guys that just make plays. And that's what the defense, especially in the secondary, has been missing the last couple of years. And they go big and bring in Cam Bynum, and they go bold big time and shell out some dough for Charvarius Ward, you know, one of the best shutdown corners in the game, even at his age. And then when the depth is getting tested a little bit in the secondary at the cornerback spot during training camp in the preseason, they don't just sit around and bring in, you know, your run-of-the-mill undrafted rookie free agent for depth. They go out and they get in, bring in Xavien Howard. They make a trade for Mekhi Blackmon, who could get a lot of run this weekend, obviously, with Ward in the concussion protocol, and then Jalen Jones is banged up a little bit with another hamstring injury. So they've got depth, and they've got guys they believe in because of their experience and their ability to kind of, you know, hang on to a lot mentally in that back end, guys that can compute and be trusted to, you know, pull off that complicated nature of what Lou Anarumo wants to do in terms of game disguise. And it's just, it's only one game, like we talked about, but man, it's really encouraging because the Colts showed more variance and more defensive fronts in one afternoon than I think they did in the last 6 years combined. It was really fun to watch. It just feels like it's kind of a dawn of a new day defensively for the Colts, and it's really exciting to see how game specific they can be week in and week out. They're not going to let the other team's best players beat them. And Cam Bynum's a big reason because of, again, that high football IQ that he has, his experience that he brings to the defense. And they're going to rely on him and Charvarius Ward and Kenny Moore and all of those guys, Nick Cross. Those guys are going to be the stars of the defense all season long if the Colts have success.
Yeah, and the just the look of that game, the look at that win, it showed confidence. It showed, what does this season lay forth? And the importance of winning the Denver game, I know it does not lie within the confines of winning the division, but just continuing to get off to that good start would be of just great importance. And the confidence that has to bring with to the Colts on both sides of the ball. Again, the defense, man, they played really, really well against a team that was expected to put up some points.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I kind of look at the analytics numbers just for reference. They give you context. They're not the end-all, be-all. But to your point, you know, teams since 1990, right? So you go back almost 30 years. Since 1990, teams that make the playoffs, or excuse me, teams that start 2-0, go on to make the playoffs 64% of the time. So it's a really good bar. It's a really good indicator. You know, if you get off to a good start, 2-0, you got a good chance to give yourself some margin for error. And that's what the Colts just haven't done. You know, it goes back to what I said at the beginning. You know, these so routinely, you know, late November through the end of the season, all of these games the last couple of years for the Colts have been just so razor thin in terms of margin for error. And you know, looking at the out-of-town scoreboard, trying to get help from this team. This team's got to lose. And, you know, just looking at all the different playoff scenarios and all the help the Colts had to get to, you know, at least be in a position to try to make the playoffs, it'd be good to see this team, you know, take care of their own business for a change. And they would take a big step in that direction by being 2-0 and beating, I think, a legitimate playoff contender in the AFC and the Broncos this weekend with that defense.
As I was listening to the game, Matt, in between chuckles of satisfaction from Rick Venturi, I wanted to get your take on this.
By the way, that's really good. Chuckles of satisfaction. I mean, he was spot on too. Yeah,
he was. I couldn't get over it. I was like, at some point, we're going to get the Howard Dean Bial from him, right? But I wanted to ask, because I don't know if this is a fair assessment. You're there every single week, but for the last 5 or 6 years, it seems to me like the crowd at Lucas Oil Stadium has been very good. But at the same time, it's also been like that Ralph Wiggum gif where he's sitting on the back of the bus like, haha, I'm in danger. And so there's almost been like a nervous energy. But on Sunday, when I was listening to the crowd, it was pure joy and excitement. Like, was that crowd different than what you had experienced before? Or am I just being critical fan?
No, I don't think so at all. I mean, I think it's very, it's a good observation on your part. You know, you see that reflected in, you know, the folks that come to the game in terms of overall attendance. You see it reflected on social media. You know, I said this in the summertime. I don't know if I said this on your show or not, Jim, but it's very fair. It's, you know, you have to be real about this, right? The Colts have missed the playoffs 4 years in a row. They've recycled quarterbacks. I mean, Daniel Jones is the 12th different quarterback, or, you know, last week became the 12th different quarterback to start a game for the Colts since 2018. In the meantime, just in the recent past here, you've had, I mean, Dustin, I know you're a huge Pacer fan, Pacer guy. I mean, they're absolutely rolling. They've got tons of franchise momentum. They go to game 7 of the NBA Finals. You know, culturally, here in Indianapolis, there's just a ton to do. We've got concert venues galore. We've got great museums and art and education, and, you know, just entertainment dollars are, you know, there's a lot of competition for them. We've got the Fever, who are rolling. They just made the playoffs, and Caitlin Clark is a huge phenomenon. The Colts know what time it is, boys, right? They understand they've got to do their part to compete in this market, even though it's the NFL. And I still think it's the, you know, the biggest and baddest, you know, guy on the block and the 800-pound gorilla. It's still, what have you done for me lately? And the Colts haven't done a lot lately, right? And so they understand there's a lot of urgency going into this season. You've seen that in the marketing strategies. You've seen that in just the football moves with, again, Lou Anarumo coming in, the decision to go to Daniel Jones because they feel he gives them the best chance to win right here and right now. So, you know, they know they've got to, you know, earn some trust back. And I thought on Sunday, the crowds have always been good. And, you know, this is a credit to Colts fans, even when, you know, last year at the end of the season, you know, they were mathematically unable to make the playoffs week 18 against the Jaguars. It was still a good crowd. It was still really engaged. And I give people a lot of credit. But I just felt like the crowd on Sunday, it was like a hallelujah moment. It was like, we've been dying. We've been starving to watch good football, and to see it play out on the field was like euphoric for a lot of people. And so they're going to come back. They to be honest with you, they really haven't gone anywhere. They're just sort of, you know, they're kind of jaded, right? And rightfully so, considering just the up and down nature of the last couple of years and the performances on the field and trying to buy into the plan at quarterback. It's been kind of confusing, to be fair, very objective there. Right. So it was good to see the crowd, you know, finally get that one payoff, but again, it's only one game. And so it's a marathon, and I'm excited to see the crowd come back, be really, really energetic and part of the outcome and the atmosphere this weekend. And hopefully the Colts can do their part to, you know, get them something else to cheer for and, you know, keep this thing going at a 2-0 start.
Absolutely, man. It's been fun, and hopefully it rolls on. Nothing more fun than having Matt Taylor and Don Fisher on your goodbye. Dustin's never heard this. Dustin, the hardest guy in the world to imitate to me is Bob Knight and Don Fisher, because they're so unique, their cadence. But Matt Taylor is, I know he gets sick and tired of me bringing it up, but he does uncanny version of Don Fisher.
Jim Coyle and Dustin Schutte on a live stream on ESPN 97.7 The Ref, also on 1380 The Fan, Fort Wayne Sports Station. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Indiana University basketball from Learfield.
That is incredible.
Incredibly spot on. We love him. You can't live without him. Make sure you catch him.
You can live without me. You got no problem there, buddy.
No, baby, you're one of the greatest. Make sure you catch him on the broadcast. Turn the TV down and the radio up, just like you do for IU Sports with Fish. Matt is the voice that you want to hear. Buddy, I appreciate you as always.
Likewise, guys. Jim, Dustin, great to be with you. Have a great weekend coming up, boys.
You as well, sir. Thank you, man. Matt Taylor joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Dustin, can't thank you enough. Glad to have you sit in more. Would love to anytime you can do that because it just makes everything better. But that's going to wrap it up for us today from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We're back tomorrow to end your week. Heading into the weekend, Indiana's got a game on Friday. Purdue taking on USC on Saturday and much, much more. Make sure you check them all out and that you're following Dustin on X and his content at Purdue SI. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Jim. It was fun.
Absolutely. And thanks to each and every one of you guys. Without you, we have no reason to be here. We're back tomorrow to do it all again. I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.